I just want to introduce him for just a minute. Many of you, I don't think, really know him because I don't think he's ever spoken at Kol Mashiach before. But he spoke at my former congregation where I was the rabbi. And I wanted an opportunity to bring him back. We finally have this opportunity. The COVID-19 business kind of delayed it, but we finally have him here. And I just want to give you a real quick introduction about Rabbi Michael Schiffman. We've known him personally for a few years now. He has been a rabbi. He is involved in humanitarian work. He is a wonderful storyteller, and I know he's going to bless you today. So without further ado, I'd like Rabbi Schiffman to come up, and we will get him situated so he can give us a word for today.
Is this on?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. I'm your treat for this morning. I'm glad I'm not the only one who finds that funny. Since you don't know me, I'll tell you a little bit about myself. Not too much. It's not that exciting. But first of all, I'm sitting here like this because I like to sit. But I had a condition where I would kind of go in and out of consciousness. You know, I could keel over. And if that's all right, but if I keel over, I don't want you to mistake it for a religious experience. I want to tell you about our ministry. Our ministry is called Chevra. Who knows what Chevra means, except for my wife? Chevra means friendship. It can also mean a society, like Chevra Kedisha, but you know, which holy society, which is the burial society. We're not about burials. But it means friendship. And our ministry started in Eastern Europe around the time of the fall of communism. And the problem was there were many Jewish people who were very poor, who didn't have bread to eat. I was minding my own business, leading my congregation in Manhattan, and a friend of mine named David, who was a, believe it or not, a Jewish missionary with the Assemblies of God to Malawi, Africa, who I met on an Israel tour. And he told me, I really love Messianic Judaism and I wanna get involved. I said, I don't know how to break it to you, but you're gonna have a little trouble in Malawi with Messianic Judaism. You know, it's like you're the only Jew. So you could be the whole movement. So. He said, well, I'm hoping they'll send us back. And they did. And he said, I'm going to get really involved. And I said, that's great. And then I didn't hear from him. And then he told me, they want me to go to Poland. And I said, better you than me. And he said, why? I said, well, my family came from Poland. I'm sure they had a very good reason for leaving. And he said, well, he told me he was crying all the way to the airport going. But he went. And then he calls me a few months later. He said, I want you to come to Poland. And I said, no. And he said, why not? Same thing I told you last time. My family left Poland. They don't like Jews there. It's the world's biggest Jewish cemetery. How many more reasons do you need? And he said, well, it's not really Poland I want you to go to. It's Ukraine. I said, even worse. And he said, why? I said, I see the news, waiting 4 hours in line for a roll of toilet paper. Who knew it would be our reality? But at that time, we were loaded with toilet paper, and they didn't have any. He said, listen, Michael, bring your own toilet paper. there are 150 Jewish people who have come to know Yeshua, and the only one to teach them is the Russian Orthodox priest who told them if they light Shabbat candles, they're going to hell. And my response was one word, ugh. Why did you tell me that? So I went. And to make a long story less long, I was hooked. Just being there and seeing these poor people, I wanted to do everything I could to help them, because I felt if it weren't for the grace of God and having my great-grandparents immigrate here, I could be them. And so they asked me to come back and do a teaching seminar, which I did. I set it up for the next spring. And we were having this seminar, and they introduced me to the humanitarian side of our work. And I had expressed some unkind comments about Germans while I was there because of the Holocaust and things like that. Don't get upset, my wife's half German. But, and I like her, but, well better. But the head of our work took me into this big storeroom, and there were floor to ceiling boxes of humanitarian aid, food, clothing, and medicine. He said, Michael, do you know where this comes from? And I said, America? And he said, no. Comes from Germany. He said German Christians send about $100,000 a month worth of humanitarian aid for us to distribute to Jewish people. You know what that testimony did? It broke my heart. What could I say? I wrote a letter to the guy who does Hevra in Germany, Hans Heinrich, and I said, I hated you. But your acts of kindness changed me, and I want you to forgive me. We've been best friends ever since. We were having a two-week seminar. We decided we were going to have a Shabbat service. I was supposed to be in charge of this. Brilliant, right? Oh, you have a free Saturday, have a Shabbat service. So we set it up, and the head of this of our work says, Michael, we have a problem, which I learned later means he solved it. He just wants you to know he solved it. So I said, what's the problem? He said, well, Jewish people from the villages around here heard you're having a Shabbat service and want to come. Because I was doing it just for our students, who were like 35 people. I said, so what's wrong? Let them come. He goes, Michael, don't be foolish. It could be 5,000 people. And I just said, oh, what are we going to do? He said, I took care of it. He said, we're sending buses. See, we were doing big on the Aliyah movement, getting Russian Jews to immigrate, and we had buses to get them to the boats and the airports and whatever. He said, I'm sending buses. We're going to get delegations of 20 people from each village to come to the Shabbat service. I said, oh, okay. And he said, by the way, do any of those places have a synagogue where there might be a Torah scroll we could borrow and use for the service? He said, oh, sure, I'll talk to the rabbi. And I went, ha, 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 I said, they're not going to learn us a Torah. I said, of course they will. I said, no, they're not. I said, what makes you think they're going to loan Messianic Jews a Torah to have a Messianic Shabbat service? He said, when the government gave them back their building after communism, it needed a new roof, and we paid for the roof. And I said, oh. I said that a lot in those days. It's not a good habit. So that Saturday morning, the rabbi came in carrying the Torah. And through a translator, he said to me, you know, I called the chief rabbi of Ukraine and asked him if it was permissible to loan a Torah to Messianic Jews. I said, what did he say? He said, it's forbidden. Then he said, I hung up the phone and said, who cares what he says? And we had this service, and it was amazing, because as the Torah went around, people were crying. It meant so much to them. They were crying. I was told that some of them had not been to a Shabbat service since the Germans invaded in 1941. Not invaded us, invaded Ukraine. So it was a very moving thing. And then at the end of the service, I was told to stall them for a while. I said, why? He said, okay, in the early 90s when this took place, meat in large quantities was hard to come by. And we had managed to get 40 chickens for 130 people. 40 chickens. And he was having them cooked in the basement, you know, where the kitchen was. And they weren't ready yet, but you could smell the chicken. And he said, I want you to stall them for a while. So I did the American thing. You know what that is. Stand up and tell us where you're from. And, you know, biggest mistake I made. Because all these old people were standing up, and every story was worse than the one that came before it. You know, we're from the city of Slavota. Before the war, we had 20,000 Jews, and now we have 300, and we need money for this, and we want to build a memorial to the people who were murdered, and we're from this village, and it was horrible, and I was hating myself for even asking them this. And then this old man stood up, and he said, why are we dwelling on our problems when we should be thanking the people who've been helping us? And the people stood up and they cheered all our humanitarian aid workers. And they were blushing red from being embarrassed, but they were cheering these people like they were their saviors. And I saw the guy who started the whole work sitting in the back of the room with a big smile on his face. Nobody acknowledged him. Nobody knew who he was. And he was not interested in having anybody know who he was. And I had heard of this before. You know, don't let the right hand know what the left hand, you know. I had heard of it, but I'd never really seen it. What I usually see is, no, 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 give God the glory. You know, no, 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 it wasn't me. It was the Lord. It was the Lord. But this guy was really doing it. And it so moved me, because his faith and his practice was so real. I said, Lord, please make a place for me in this work. I want to do this. And within a couple of months, they asked me to volunteer again. That's not what I had in mind. But I volunteered again. Every time I went, it was like a life-changing thing for me. And then they asked me to work with them full-time. And I've been doing that since 1993. Now I'll start talking about the work. No, I'm just... But as I got involved in this work, I found that it did change me. I started with teaching, but my heart was really for humanitarian work. And the reason was, there were Jewish people who were going to bed at night without anything to eat. And when they woke up in the morning, they had no food to look forward to. And here we are in the land of plenty. You know, we've been focusing on how much we've been suffering with COVID. And, you know, it's true. I mean, it's not a hoax or anything like that. I've had one person die from it, another person who was in the hospital for 8 weeks. You know, this stuff is real. My mother tested positive. This is no hoax. But even with it, compared to 95% of the planet, we hit the lottery. We live in America, and we are blessed. And whether you give to Hevra or not, recognize that we are a blessed people, and God has done great things for us. But it bothered me horribly that Jewish people went to sleep at night and didn't know if they were going to eat the next day. And my ministry is to travel from place to place, visiting the people that we feed. And I want to hear their stories so I can share their stories. I visited one lady in a small village called Alexandrovka. She was living in a hut with one of those heavy grass roofs. You walk inside, the floor is dirt. They put like carpet over it, but it's dirt. 84 years old, she was on a ladder, crying, trying to fix her roof because winter was coming. And if you have a hole in your roof, in addition to stuff getting in, heat goes out, and she could die. So when I was there, I said, what would it take to fix her roof? They said $100. What's $100 to you? Not that much. It used to, I remember when $100 was a lot, but not anymore. I gave them $100. I said, get a roof fixed. I worried all winter, maybe they didn't fix it. And I spoke to the guy who goes, Michael, when you give out money, I follow to see what happens. Because they fixed the roof, she's fine. I rested easier. But I visit soup kitchens that we have. We are presently feeding 1,400 people 5 days a week in 35 soup kitchens in Ukraine. Most of the people we help are elderly Jews. We are also helping single parents, households, mother and children, sometimes a father and children. We're also helping, the word we would use is disabled. There they call them invalids. In Russian they say invalid, which sounds so, politically incorrect. But over there, that's the term. It's what?
It's correct.
Yes, it is. I wouldn't lie to you. But we visit. And you have to realize it's a humiliating thing for these people to have to receive help. We think, it's like hitting the lottery, it's easy street. It's not. Have any of you ever had to receive help? It was a real pride builder, wasn't it? No, it was humiliating. We try to preserve people's dignity. When I go in, I really don't want people knowing that I sponsor the soup kitchens. But we cooperate. We've been doing this for over 25 years. We cooperate with some of the Jewish organizations because they trust us, because we've been there for 25 years. We're not going to make promises and leave. But the important thing is we're making a difference in people's lives. We don't get that many opportunities to really make a difference in people's lives, do we? But that's what God put us here for, to make a difference in the lives of others for Yeshua's sake, in Yeshua's name. Did I bore you with my stories? Would you like another story? This is a good one. Jude liked this story. If you have known me over 10 years, and I think there are only two people here who can say that, maybe three, I used to be a real heavy guy. This chair would not hold me from side to side. What are you laughing about? I weighed 150 pounds more than I weigh now. And not that I'm a lightweight at this point, but at that point, I was huge. And my doctor said, I went for a checkup, and the doctor said, Michael, if you don't lose weight, you're going to be dead in 5 years. I said, why do you say that? He says, well, your blood pressure's through the roof. Your cholesterol is through the roof. You're getting diabetes. What more do you want? I said, well, nothing works. I've tried to lose weight and nothing works. That was my situation. He said, well, there are diets. I said, really? I weigh this much and you think I've never been on a diet? I've been on all of them and they don't work. And I said, before you say it, I've been on every diet pill. There was one that was really good, but it caused heart problems. That was a great pill, but they don't do it anymore, so don't even try. But I lost weight on it, but then it all went back. Plus, the problem with pills are they only work as long as you're on them. They're lying. I said, well, what am I supposed to do? He said, well, there's a surgery. I said, I'll have a surgery gladly. You weigh that much, you don't mind surgery. So contacted my insurance company. And they said, yeah, we know about that surgery. We don't cover it. I said, yeah, but the doctor said I could die. And they said, well, we're sorry about that, but we don't cover it. I said, okay. Surgery was expensive. Surgery's still expensive. And I told some of my friends, we were at a rabbi's meeting, I said, by the way, if you want to see me, you better do it in the next 5 years because I'm going to be dead. You know, I'm from New York, and if you couldn't tell, and that's, you know, not going to beat around the bush about stuff like that. 5 years or I'm gone. And I had some people send me diets. I had other people tell me I should get into an exercise regimen. I don't talk to them anymore. And I had one friend who said, I am going to raise the money. And I said, yeah, right. I said, look, I know my friends. They're nice people. If I ask them to write a check for $100, they'll write a check for $100. But we're talking like tens of thousands for the surgery. And my friends aren't that good of friends. And they said, he said, well, I'm going to try. I said, more power to you. 3 months later, he calls me up. I raised all the money. And I said, huh? I raised all the money. Go have your surgery. So I go to the surgeon. You're going to like this. A Chinese Christian named Moses. You can't make this stuff up. And I told him how we raised, how the money came by, and he had tears in his eyes. I think he knocked a few bucks off it, too. And I had the surgery. And over an 18-month period, I lost 150 pounds. I still have my old suit jacket, which I did not bring. You could literally fit somebody else in it with me. I did stuff a pillow in it once, one Hanukkah, but never mind. I learned something through that surgery. By the way, you don't take for granted, what a blessing it is to sit in a chair and fit, to go on a plane and be able to buckle the seatbelt without a seatbelt extension, and to be able to have extra room, and to be able to put the tray table down and have it not hit you. It was a life changer. And I asked my friend for a list of the people that gave money. It wasn't like at a congregation I could ask. These people did something to help me. And not Well, one of them was a rich person, but they weren't the biggest giver. The people that gave, gave beyond their means. In a couple of cases, in the thousands. And they didn't have money. And it made me realize that they gave sacrificially. It cost them that I might live. You know what that does to you? It made me realize that when someone has given sacrificially for your life, it makes you want to live your life in a way that honors their sacrifice. I live my life for God in a way that honors His sacrifice for me. It means I can't be as self-centered as I like to be. It means I can't be as selfish as I want to be. We all want to be selfish, but we know we shouldn't. It's not a good thing. But it makes me feel that when I am giving something for my ministry and I'm helping Jewish people in Eastern Europe, I'm becoming the hands of Yeshua to bless our people. There aren't that many opportunities we have in our lives where we can really become the hands of Yeshua. You can do it locally, you know. You've got people all around you that God has put in your life. It doesn't take a lot, very little. Sometimes just be nice to them. Sometimes that's harder than you think. But you be nice to people. You help them if they need help. Acts of kindness and mercy. Becoming Yeshua to the people around you. We don't get that many chances to help Jewish people in need, but this is that kind of an opportunity. And it doesn't take a lot. You know what we need to feed someone for a month? $33. What's $33 to us, rich Americans? $33 is maybe one meal out, maybe not even. It's not that much, but you can feed someone for a month. What we really need are people who would actually do it, give $33 a month regularly so we can feed someone. Tell you why I say regularly. Not because there's always next month to think about, but there's always next month to think about. We cannot invite someone to a soup kitchen because we have money and then next month tell them don't show up because we don't have money. We need the consistency of people giving every month so we can make a commitment to the people who really need it. It's not me. I got $33. I'm not bragging, but I do. And I don't need anybody to give for me to have food. And most of us here don't need other people to get us food. And in this country, if you do, we have food pantries. During the pandemic, which is still among us, as you know, we had to close our soup kitchens for about 6 to 8 weeks throughout Ukraine. And we worried about these people. What are we going to do for them? Because if we're not feeding them, these are people who literally have no other source of food. We're it. They're living on between $35 and $50 a month. And they do not have money to eat because they're busy either paying rent or utilities or medicine. They don't have it. So we provide food. We brought food parcels, packages of food. We don't like to use that because it costs more money and they're getting less food. But they were there with the masks and everything else, providing food because it was the best we could do under the circumstance. Thank God in the past month we were able to open the soup kitchens again. And you know what, I got a call from Ukraine. Can you do more? I said, me? I can't do anything. But maybe my friends can help. And so I come. And I ask you to help our people. I have a video. By the way, Ukraine, in on and off, is in the news. Not so much. But if you remember, Ukraine's in the middle of a war. And a lot of the people that we're helping are refugees. The war was gave us extra work to do. Which one are you going to? I have two short videos.
If you watch the news, you don't see a lot of coverage on it. But there has been a war going on between Ukraine and Russia, primarily in the eastern provinces. There have been a lot of refugees coming from eastern Ukraine more into the central part of the country. And they're war refugees. They're in serious need. According to statistics, there are about 25,000 refugees. Unofficially, though, there are over 125,000 refugees. And these are people who had homes, they had businesses. Sat down with a couple on my last trip. This was an elderly couple, and they were sitting in their apartment, and one day, Russian soldiers knocked on their door and said, "You are not for Russia, you are for Ukraine, you must leave." And they literally ushered them out of their apartment, and they were in the street, walking, looking back at their apartment, and they saw as their apartment building was leveled, they didn't have food to eat, they didn't have money for food. And so we started a soup kitchen in that city, and right now that soup kitchen's feeding 30 people. Chevra is a Hebrew word that means friendship, and it signifies the fact that we want to be friends. We want to be helpful to people in need. For $33 a month, we can feed somebody 5 days a week for a whole month, and they're getting good, solid food, warm, hot meals. We also give out food parcels, so they'll have something at home. We need people who not only will send a one-time donation, but if we can have regular giving, it enables us to be able to commit to add more people for the next year. Because when people are invited to a soup kitchen, you can't feed them for a month and then say, okay, we don't have money this month, so you have to go home. You have to make a commitment to them. So we need people who will commit to giving regularly. They could give $33 a month, they could give it in multiples. If they could give $330 a month, they could feed 10 people for each month. We're operating a soup kitchen in a city called Drahovich, and this old lady named Rita was sitting towards the back, and she saw me and she motioned for me to come over. She said, "Before communism ended, I was the chief physician for this region, and now I'm living on $35 a month. If it were not for this soup kitchen, I would be dead. And all these people you see here, if it weren't for the soup kitchen, they would be dead. So I'm telling you, we are grateful." It made me very aware that these soup kitchens are the difference between life and death for people. And we're showing kindness to them and help to them. We're being friends to them.
There was a map of where all our soup kitchens are located. I made a second. This one, a guy donated his time. He was a filmmaker and put this together for us, which to me was really impressive. The next one is something, I am not a technical person, and I was playing, they had this program to make your own video on my computer. So I was playing around with it and came up with this one. I hope you'll enjoy it. Thank you. in the book of James, Yaakov. It says, pure and undefiled religion is to take care of widows, orphans, the needy of our land. The Torah speaks of it as well. We have a chance to do something. I could have done a whole expository thing on Matthew 25. I love the parable of the sheep and the goats. But it comes down to this. I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was naked and you clothed me. And they said to him, Lord, when did we ever do this for you? And he said, when you did it to the least of these, my brethren, you did it for me. It's an opportunity to do something, to help our people in need. So if you can help, I would be grateful, and I'm speaking for them because they are grateful. Thank you. Oops. I told you I'm not technical.
Amen. Well, thank you for coming and speaking to us, Rabbi. We're going to take a minute and before we close our service, and we're going to take an opportunity to bless this ministry.